A big shout out goes to Groundnews for sponsoring this video. What's the difference between this and this? Well, apart from the size and several million dollars, surprisingly not a lot. When we think of the iconic space programs like Apollo and the latest generation of SpaceX reusable vehicles, we're seeing liquid-fueled rockets using cryogenic propellants and oxidizers, that is gases like hydrogen, oxygen and methane, which are cooled until they become liquids and then stored in huge tanks inside the rocket's body. From here, they are pumped in huge quantities into the rocket engines and ignited, producing the thrust, which then propels the rocket. But there is another method that doesn't use liquid fuels that's been around since the 11th century. It's both simple to use and manufacture compared to liquid fuels, and outside of the space industry, propels nearly all surface-to-air and air-to-air weapons and missiles. These are the solid fuel rocket motors. So let's see how these have been used in space programs to augment liquid-fueled rocket engines of the Shuttle and the SLS, and why we might not be seeing these massive rockets again in the future. Solid rocket motors have been around for a very long time, far longer than liquid-fueled rockets, which are really only an invention of the early 20th century. Solid rockets came about as a byproduct of the discovery of the explosive effects of early gunpowder, a mixture of saltpeter, sulfur and charcoal dust, which was created in ancient China. To create explosions during religious festivals, bamboo tubes were filled with this gunpowder and then sealed at both ends and thrown onto fires. It's thought that some of these didn't explode, but instead one end opened slightly and allowed the rapidly expanding gases to escape and they would fly across the ground. This principle was the first military use of rockets, which were known as fire arrows. The rocket body would be strapped to an arrow and then launched from a handheld basket-type launcher. It's thought that the Mongols, during their battles with the Chinese, developed their own fire arrows and gunpowder bombs, and they took these with them on their military campaigns as far as Eastern Europe. Rockets were used in many places, including the Kingdom of Mysore in southern India, where they helped defeat the British East India Company in the 1780s. News of these triggered research in England, France, Ireland, and elsewhere. Later, during the War of Independence of 1812, the British Royal Navy used modified versions of these Indian rockets to bombard Fort McHenry. As for rockets to lift heavier items, nothing really happened much up until the beginning of the 20th century, when in 1898, Russian schoolteacher Konstantin Tsiolkovsky proposed the idea of the exploration of space using rockets. In 1921, the Soviets started development work at the Gas Dynamics Laboratory into more powerful solid rockets, which flew in 1928 for about 1,300 metres. Over the next two decades, the Soviets and the US created a whole range of solid rocket-based weaponry for use in ground-to-air, ground-to-ground, air-to-ground and air-to-air combat. One of the most fearsome of these was the Katyusha multiple rocket launcher, which could launch a salvo of up to 48 rockets up to 11 kilometres, and during World War II, 12 million of these were produced in the Soviet Union. And this simple type of unguided missile system is still widely in service throughout the world today. But it will be the development after the Second World War and into the 60s by both the Soviet Union and the United States into solid rocket motors for tactical, ballistic and intercontinental ballistic missiles that would lead to the largest boosters being made for orbital and deep space launches. SRBs, or solid rocket boosters, got a bit of a bad reputation after the Challenger disaster of 1986, and that was well before the internet and the wild conspiracy theories of today. But in the 24/7 news-driven world in which we live, claims and counterclaims make it difficult to get to the truth, and this is where Ground News can help you see through all the noise of the competing stories. Ground News is an app and website that gathers news from over 50,000 sources, but more importantly, it shows you the sources' political leaning, factuality, and even who owns them. To show how different news media report the same headline, let's have a look at a story about how Elon Musk's X had to edit its AI chatbot after election officials warned that it was spreading misinformation after Biden suddenly dropped out of the running. In the bias distribution table, we can see this story has only got 12% coverage from the right. So if you only read right-leaning media, then you could quite easily miss out on this story. On the left of the page, you will see the list of articles. Here they are all shown, but you can filter them down depending on whether you want to see them from the left, the centre, or the right. Some of the sources use the term misinformation and some don't, and that will often be the case depending upon their political leaning. Ground News has a dedicated blind spot tab that shows only stories with little or no coverage from one side of a political spectrum that you might miss based on the kind of news media that you read. You can add them to your own following feed or search for any topic or news that interests you in particular. To find out more and access data-driven information from around the world, go to ground.news/droid. The link is in the description below. And if you subscribe through my link today, you'll get 50% off the Vantage plan for unlimited access. In the 1950s and early 60s, the US Air Force was doing research into increasingly large rocket engines. Although they didn't really have any purpose for these at the time, it was more for research and to know that they might have something to fall back on in the future. One possible use for these very large engines was the proposed USAF LUNEX project for the manned lunar landing. But after NASA was set up in 1958, space research would be moved from the Air Force to NASA. A couple of engines which did come out of this research were the Rocketdyne F1 engine and the even bigger Aerojet M1. Although the M1 only had parts of it tested, the whole engine was never actually built. So when NASA proposed the Apollo program, the F1 engine was an obvious choice to use for the Saturn rocket. However, things were not plain sailing for its development. A liquid-fueled engine like this had never been built on this scale before, and there was no guarantee that it would work or be in time to meet JFK's deadline to put men on the moon by the end of the decade. So as a backup, work was done on creating solid rocket motors, or SRMs, that would be a one-to-one replacement for the F1. A lot of work had already been done on SRMs with programs like the Nike Zeus anti-ballistic missile system, the Pershing, and eventually the Minuteman ICBM. The advantage that solid rocket motors gave was that they were relatively simple to make and operate. They could sit in a silo for months or years with very little in the way of any maintenance and be ready to go in a matter of moments. However, early solid rocket motors had other issues. Unlike liquid fuel rockets, which could be throttled by controlling the amount of fuel delivered into the combustion chamber, once you start a solid rocket, it will run at full power until the fuel runs out. They also have a low specific impulse, which means they use their fuel quickly, usually in about 2 minutes. So on the space shuttle, they were ejected before they reached space. In some modern solid fuel rockets, there are ways of using new types of propellants and techniques to control the thrust generated and even stop and restart them. But back in the 50s and 60s, these were either full power or nothing. Gimbling the nozzle to control the angle of thrust was also something which hadn't been done before with large solid rockets. Also, controlling the thrust profile, in other words, how the thrust builds up, then sustains over time, and then drops off, was something that the space industry needed during the launch and control, for example, when the rocket goes through max Q, or the maximum dynamic pressure during a launch. However, the sheer size of these solid rocket motors meant that new techniques of manufacture and transport had to be developed. The development work was done by Thiokol and Aerojet, although it would be Aerojet which built the SRMs, starting with the Aerojet 100-inch diameter motor designs. This was gradually increased in size and significant advances were made, culminating in the successful test of 6 120-inch, 9 156-inch, and 3 260-inch diameter solid rocket motors. The AJ-260, as it was known, became the largest solid rocket motor ever to be built and tested. The 260-inch, almost 6.63 metres, was so large that it was too wide to fit onto a train for transport. So Aerojet set up a factory and test area in the Florida Everglades, where they could be shipped by road and barge to the Cape Canaveral launch site 250 miles away. That never happened, because the Rocketdyne F1 proved to be one of the most powerful and reliable liquid fuel rocket engines ever made, and there was no need for a solid rocket backup. But there was also no need for such a large rocket motor after the Apollo ended either. However, the AJ-260 was tested 3 times. The first and second test firings proved to be totally successful, with a maximum output of 3.6 million pounds of thrust, over twice the 1.5 million pounds of thrust generated by a single F1 engine, more than enough to replace all 8 H1 engines of the Saturn I rocket. To test the rocket motors, they were lowered into a 150-foot silo with the nozzle pointing upwards. When the test was running, the exhaust plume could be seen over 80 miles or 132 kilometers away. The third test firing differed because it used a large ablative nozzle using a submerged nozzle configuration similar to those proposed for thrust vectoring control systems. The propellant formula was also changed to one that would have an increased burn rate, and the chamber from the first test rocket was refurbished and refilled for this third test. However, it was only partially successful, as some of the propellant was ejected and caused the loss of the exit cone during the latter portion of the test. Later tests showed that the flow characteristics of the new propellant were not compatible with the casting process for the propellant. But it did generate a maximum thrust in excess of 5 million pounds of thrust, over 3.5 times the thrust of a single F1 engine, and it remains to this day the most powerful rocket engine, be that solid or liquid, ever tested. Although the Aerojet AJ-260 was never used, the test data and experience gained was put to use to create the solid rocket boosters for the Space Shuttle in the 80s, although it would be Thiokol, not Aerojet, that would build these new boosters. The Shuttle's solid rocket boosters were slightly smaller at 146-inch, or 3.71 metres in diameter, narrow enough to be transported by train for the 2,000-mile journey from Utah to the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. The Shuttle SRBs were designed to be reusable, as had been proved in the final AJ-260 test, but all but 4 of the 270 SRBs launched in the Shuttle program were recovered, and over 5,000 parts were reused after each flight. They also used thrust vectoring, which moved the nozzle up and down and side to side to help control the vehicle in all 3 axes, something which was only at the very beginning of being developed when the AJ-260 was tested. The Shuttle SRBs were the most powerful solid rocket motors ever to launch humans into space, developing 3.3 million pounds of thrust each, and between the two of them generated 85% of the thrust at liftoff for the Space Shuttle launches. After the Shuttle program ended, there were several proposals to use the SRBs, but none came to fruition until the Space Launch System of 2022, which used a pair of 5-segment SRBs developed from the 4-segment versions used for the Shuttle to give a longer burn time and 3.6 million pounds of thrust, although none of the SLS SRBs were recovered after use. With SpaceX's reusable rockets and more efficient, less polluting liquid-fueled engines, solid rocket motors for the space industry will be limited to small launch vehicles, and it seems unlikely that any completely new rocket design will use the large-scale SRBs like that of the Shuttle or SLS, let alone the AJ-260, for their first stages due to the inefficient use of a propellant for each kilogram lifted into orbit, and they cannot be controlled like liquid-fueled engines for complex manoeuvring. However, solid rocket motors have a long history of being used for the final boost stage for satellites due to their simplicity, reliability, and small size. Spin-stabilized rocket motors are used when extra velocity is required for such missions to the outer solar system. So solid rocket motors have a bright future here on Earth in the military and for small space operations. But it's unlikely we'll ever see anything approaching the AJ-260 in the future. So, thanks for watching, and I hope you enjoyed the video. Don't forget to thumbs up, share, and subscribe. A big thanks go to all our patrons for their ongoing support.